Back when I was undergoing my midlife transition, I became a storyteller. I found certain classical myths emotionally important to me. I found the myths of the dying, reborn god spoke to my inner being. As I told them, my voice would catch and I would fight back tears. Death and rebirth was a message I needed just then. The mystery religions of the Mediterranean 2,000 years ago were focused on these myths. As I try to understand the power of the myths, I have looked into the mystery religions as best I can. The word mystery means secret. These mystery religions held initiations, and the initiates were forbidden to speak of what they experienced and learned. Often the civil government helped by making it a capital crime to speak about the rites to outsiders. These mystery religions may also be called mystery cults. Technically, a cult is a religious special interest group. Although we may not know the details of the rites of initiation, we can know broadly what they involved. Victor Turner studied rites of initiation and found a common element. These rites put initiates in a state he called liminality. The Latin sounds ever so much more scientific than doorway, gateway, portal. The liminal state is perfectly natural for groups of people in transition, but it is in many ways opposite of everyday life. Here are some differences Turner noted. Everyday life, Turner calls structured, but the liminal state he characterized by communitas. Everyday life is characterized by inequality, but the liminal state by equality. In contrast to everyday life, the liminal state is marked by not status, but the absence of status. Not distinctions in clothing, but uniformity of clothing. Not maximization of sex differences, but minimization of sex differences. Not distinctions of rank, but absence of rank. Not pride of position, but humility. Not care for personal appearance, but disregard. Not selfishness, but unselfishness. Not obedience only to those with superior rank, but total obedience. Not kinship, but suspension of kinship. Not avoidance of pain and suffering, but acceptance of pain and suffering. For example, there's the cult of the goddess Isis. The myth is basically how the god Osiris is suffocated and dismembered by his brother Set, and Isis gathers up the pieces and brings him back to life. As best we can make out in the mystery rites of the goddess Isis, the initiate prepared by fasting, remaining abstinent, and meditating in solitude. During the rites, he would be presented with temptations. At the culmination of rites, the initiate would impersonate the god Set and be abused. Then the initiated, brought to simulated death, was raised through the power of the goddess Isis. The following morning, having become one with the god Osiris, the initiate, wearing a robe, bedecked with a garland of flowers, and carrying a lighted torch, would be placed on a pedestal across from the statue of the goddess Isis. Curtains were drawn back, and the people hailed him as a god. Notice the abuse the initiate accepted. Notice the death and resurrection motif. One of the current rites of initiation is military boot camp. The initiates are separated from their families and previous lives for a period of weeks. They accept pain and suffering. The initiates wear uniform clothing, lack status and rank, disregard personal appearance, and give total obedience to the ritual elders, i.e., the drill sergeants and officers of the basic training company. Early Christianity was something of a mystery cult, at least among the Gentiles. After all, Jesus died, spent time in the underworld, and returned, just like the gods in the myths. When Paul got permission to spread Christianity to non-Jews without forcing them to convert to Judaism, the new members came with expectations about what the religion should be. They were looking for a mystery cult. And the authorities helped by putting people to death for divulging merely that they were members. There are signs of a Christian mystery cult in the Gospel of Thomas. Ever heard of that? The Gospel of Thomas was not included in the Bible, and some of the Orthodox bishops tried to destroy all copies of it, but several copies survived. Here's a song I adapted from the Gospel of Thomas. They ask, where do you come from? We say we come from the light, from where the light brought forth itself and gave the world its sight. They ask us, who are you? We say we're sisters and brothers. We are the chosen ones, the children of the living Father. Whoever has ears to hear, let them hear. If you bring forth what lies within, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring it forth, what lies within will slay you. So bring forth what is in you. They ask, what is the sign in you of the Father you have professed? We say it's in our movement. We say it's in our rest. Whoever has ears to hear, let them hear. If you bring forth what lies within, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring it forth, what lies within will slay you. So bring forth what is in you. When you make the two be one, when you make the inner like the outer, and the outer like the inner, and the upper like the lower, and when you make the male and female into a single one, so the male is not a male, the female not a female. When you make eyes in place of eyes, and hands in place of hands, and feet in place of feet, and guys in place of guys, then you shall come into that land. Whoever has ears to hear, let them hear. If you bring forth what lies within, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring it forth, what lies within will slay you. So bring forth what is in you. On your life, bring forth what is in you. Strangely, I was inspired to write that song a long time before I knew that I'd be using it for this. Why would I pick those verses? Those verses which so clearly show the signs of a mystery cult. The verses, they ask us, we say. The verses may very well be the challenge and response to prove you were a member of the group so that you could get into a meeting. You don't want just any old Roman wandering in. All the mystery religions had passwords and challenge and response. In the bridge, the part about making two be one. When you make the two be one, the inner like the outer like the inner, the upper like the lower. That seems to be a description of the liminal state, the equality, abolishing rank, status. And when you make the male and female into a single one, abolishing sexual differences. You can find the same sentiment in Paul's letter to the Galatians, 3:28. There is neither Jew nor Gentile. There is neither slave nor free. There is no male and female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. The part about making eyes in place of eyes and so forth can be interpreted as, to save yourself a complete catalog, becoming a completely new person. So having entered the liminal state and become new, then you will enter what? Enter the kingdom of God, I'm guessing. You will be saved. I just have to mention a couple of differences between the Gospel of Thomas and the Gospel of John. John says everything comes from the Word. Thomas says everything comes from the light. I don't know what to make of that difference. For the other difference, when I was in a group reading through the Gospel of Thomas, we came to quotation number 70. The Gospel of Thomas is basically just a book of quotations. Quotation number 70, Jesus said, "When you give rise to that which is within you, what you have will save you. If you do not give rise to it, what you do not have will destroy you." At that point, a conservative Christian woman said, "That's not true. That's not true. Nothing you have in you can save you." I thought, what a pity Jesus isn't here now. You could put him straight about his theology. But according to the Gospel of John, she's right. John says there's no salvation except through Christ. Thomas says we have salvation within us. Why is the Gospel of John in the Bible and the Gospel of Thomas not? Perhaps I'm being a bit cynical, but if you were a bishop, which would you rather have people believe? That you have your salvation within yourselves, or that you can only be saved through the Christ, and the only way to the Christ is through us? I'm sure there are people here who want to know about how all this applies to the recent additions to America's religious landscape, the so-called cults. Melton and Moore discuss these groups in their book, The Cult Experience, Responding to the New Religious Pluralism. Now, many of the cults offer initiation experiences for people going through the transition to adulthood. Do they brainwash the members? There's no reason to believe that. The weird behavior of the young members is normal to the liminal state, and a liminal state is normal during a life transition. Are the young people lost forever to their families and society? Typically, no. Most return to the everyday world after arriving at their new adult personalities. Those who stay are mostly those who get jobs working for the new religion. There are some people who never get through a transition, who remain in a liminal state. It's one of the risks of living. All churches have them. Ministers learn sustaining pastoral care to serve that population. And there are some people with psychoses in the cults, as there are in any denomination. As of last I heard, there's no evidence that the cults were more attractive to the chronically liminal or to psychotic individuals than other denominations. Now, we in the Sunday Services Committee, I have to throw in the Sunday so you know what Services Committee means, want an element of liminality in Sunday services. It can't be a full liminal experience. Because, well, it does not lead to a life transition. Most people are not here who are undergoing a life transition, and the duration of the service is way insufficient to build liminality. A Sunday service lasts an hour. The Eleusinian Mysteries, the most important ritual of ancient times, required over 3 weeks. Army boot camp takes 10 weeks. But services may provide a liminoid experience. Turner defined liminoid, the liminoid state, as having elements of communitas, but being more the nature of stepping aside from life rather than transforming it. Our church services provide communitas, a community of equals, but they certainly do not provide all aspects of liminality. you use are not going to indulge in total obedience. We may provide liminality better in some of our social action groups, but I fear UUs are deficient in providing liminality. Through the ages, people have needed liminality and have sought it out. But we don't provide full rites of passage with ritual elders keeping the experience safe. I think it's likely that you have not thought about liminality at all, and certainly would not welcome the weird mental states that reverse everyday life. But as I resist my late adult transition, it seems to me that our lack of full rites of passage, both in our denomination and our society at large, is an unfortunate omission. We still go through transitions, but mostly alone and confused. I say that liminality is a part of life we must learn to embrace.